Hey History is a podcast all about Australian history, where the kids ask the questions. I'm your host, Axel Clark. In each episode of Hey History, we'll hear stories and answer your questions. Questions like,
if I could go back in time, I'd probably ask my ancestors how they learned.
If there's no school, how did Aboriginal people learn?
Ask what their classroom looks like, or even if they have a classroom there, to see what it looks like.
And at Hey History, we don't just stop when we get an answer, because
how do we know what really happened? Is there another side to the story?
In this episode, we're asking, how did Indigenous people learn before schools and books and the internet? You can listen to this episode straight through or stop halfway if you'd like. I'll tell you when we've reached halfway.
Hey, History.
To get us going, I've got a question for you. How do you learn stuff?
Sometimes, like, I just ask my parents and my nan.
Well, to learn things, you have to either get an education, just teach yourself through trial and error.
I write notes down.
Teachers, maybe learning support.
I read lots of books.
By looking at pictures and
I use Google to research my answers.
Friends also help.
Yeah, I learn in pretty much all of those ways too. For over 60,000 years, First Nations people have been living here and caring for country, right up until today. And part of caring for country is learning. Today, we can learn stuff using books and school and the internet, but how did First Nations people learn before then? Let's ask the kids at
Laparoos Primary School, and we're on Bidjigal country.
Laparoos is an Aboriginal community in Sydney. It's across the bay from where Captain Cook and the Endeavour visited in 1770. So, what can you guys tell us about your ancestors learning on country?
There would have been, like, drawings on, like, cave walls. That would be, like, the classroom. And they'd, like, put pictures and, like, carve pictures. And that's how they would, like, basically learn. It would have been the grandmothers or grandfathers that would teach. People would go and, like, see them. And then they'd, like, go back and, like, teach all the little kids and all the young ones and all that. Probably would have talked in language, like in an Aboriginal language. They would have been like saying, this is a story that I'm about to tell you. And they'd be telling them. And then what would happen was they would have learned from like their grandmothers or grandfathers, and then they would have learned from, and it'd be passed down just generations, generations, generations. And that's how we learn like all this now.
They would probably like get rocks or stuff. They would draw. But I'm not kind of sure if that's right because I wasn't alive back then.
Yeah, I don't think I was alive either. And thanks for telling us what you know. So, was a cave with rock art a classroom?
Let's find out!
Now we're leaving Laparoos and going west, over Kamay, Botany Bay, and across to the Blue Mountains, on the edge of Sydney. We're going up to Wentworth Falls, on Darug and Gundungurra country. And we're meeting up with Wayne Brennan, a First Nations archaeologist from Gomeroi country. Wayne's got long grey hair to his shoulders and a big smile, and he's going to help us today.
G'day, Axel, how are you going?
Oh, good,
I
how
believe,
are you?
I believe you and I are going to hang out today.
Oh, I heard so, yeah.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Wayne Brennan's my name. I'm from right. Sydney University.
Right, we're going to look at some caves today, I heard.
Indeed we are.
Yeah.
You ready?
I sure am.
You're not worried about the rain?
We'll see how it goes.
Oh, let's go. Off we go. $22,500 years old place. All right, here we go.
I've just followed Wayne down a bush track. And now we're in a small cave. A rock shelter, really. It's about the size of a front porch, or a small veranda, or balcony. We can fully stand up, and there's lots of room to walk around. I'm looking out on lots of gum trees and some huge green tree ferns. All I can see is bush. The leaves on the trees are wet because it's raining a bit. The rain's making a tiny waterfall over the edge of the cave, but inside the cave, we're totally dry.
What is this place?
This is an ancient place where Aboriginal people used to come and do ceremony and gather, tell stories and get taught things. We could sit here and I could teach. And that's what this place is. It's about teaching about law, teaching about things.
I thought this was just an ordinary little cave in the bush, but Wayne says it's not. It's a teaching place. Which makes me think, is the cave wall kind of like a big whiteboard? Because I can see things carved into the cave wall. So I asked Wayne,
what's all over the walls?
Well, these are vertical engravings. And it is to tell the story of this particular place and the people that belong here. And so we've got here these two kangaroo tracks, and we've also got emu tracks.
We're in the rock shelter, and Wayne's showing me some pictures carved into the wall of it. When I look closely, I can see a footprint of a kangaroo with its big long toe. And there's another one nearby. It looks like a capital Y. Oh yeah, it's an emu footprint, carved into the wall, but with an extra line going up. Can you imagine it?
If I saw those like tracks in there, I'll be like, wow, that's so cool. But if I took other people there, I wonder how they would react.
Rock art is very cool and interesting.
I thought it would be cool just to go up and come across something that could have been like done like thousands and thousands of years ago.
If you were to make one of these now, yes. So if you were to take a rock, make one of these now, how would you do it? What rocks would you get?
Okay.
How would you do it?
I would get a fairly hard rock, such as quartzite or basalt pebble, and then I'd rub it. So it's totally right. Rubbed. And that's how these vertical engravings are made.
Excuse me, can I ask something?
I've seen a stencil on a cave wall. How is that made?
So, a stencil is this. I put ochre in my mouth and I mix it usually with a fixer of some sort, which could be blood. There's a glue that you can get from out of some of the orchids, which fixes the paint to the wall. If you just use straight ochre, it's going to wash off.
Ochre is a kind of clay, which is found in the ground. It comes in all different colours, like yellow, white, orange, red and brown.
So I fill up my mouth with all the ingredients that I've mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
Like
and
this.
You need to blow it through a pipe or with a...
No, we can blow it through a pipe, but generally you just blow it through the mouth and you spray it, because that's part of the deal. Yeah, and you go... and that leaves a negative impression.
Do you know what Wayne means by negative impression? Imagine this. Put your hand down flat on a piece of paper, then pretend you've got orange juice in your mouth, and you blow the juice all over your hand. So now you'd have a very sticky, wet hand, but when you lift your hand up, there'd be an orange outline of your hand on the paper. That's basically how ochre stencils on rocks and cave walls are made. Pretty cool, huh? There's also a third kind of rock art, a print. Wayne explains what a print is.
A print is like sticking into a pad.
And handprints are far
rarer. And like that, yes. Very rare.
So First Nations people rub drawings into rocks. They're called engravings. And they made stencils and prints using ochre. You can see a photo of ochre in the episode image or on our website. It's in the collection of the National Museum of Australia. Let's get back to the cave wall, with the engravings of emu tracks and kangaroo tracks.
What does it represent? How do we know what this is? What do we think this is?
Generally, tracks have to do with our ancestral creational beings and the creation of this place here. The meaning of these kangaroo tracks are going to depend on who you are, where you're from, and what knowledge level you're at, because there's different levels of knowledge.
Different levels of knowledge? What does that really mean? Maybe it's like different grades at school, where you move up to a new class each year and you're all kind of the same age. But thousands of years ago, there were no schools. So with no year levels, how did they decide when to teach you more stuff?
I'm responsible for the knowledge that I hold. So to give you knowledge, two things. One is I have to believe that you're ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the community has to acknowledge that you're ready for it.
Like getting your pen license, you have to be like ready for it. Pen license is where you can be whatever age and you just have to have neat writing and it has to be good for you to use a pen in school because you couldn't erase it. You can get your pen license at any age. It's just more when you're ready.
Oh, yeah. And a driver's license works the same way. You learn when you're ready. Would you like it if your school worked like that? Okay, we've reached halfway through the episode. If you'd like to pause now, you can. If you've just come back from a break, let's catch up on what's happened.
Hey, history!
So far, we visited La Perouse Primary School in Sydney, and students told us what they know about how their ancestors, First Nations people, learnt before books and schools and the internet. We met up with Gomeroi archaeologist Wayne Brennan. He took us to a cave in the Blue Mountains. The cave wall had emu and kangaroo tracks carved into it. These pictures are called engravings. Wayne says this cave, with these engravings, is a teaching place, like an old classroom. He says this cave is just one of many teaching places on country. And one last thing, you learn when you're ready, when adults and your community think you're ready. Okay, all caught up? Let's go. At school today, it's the teachers who write your report and test how much you know. So I asked Wayne, how's the community part of learning?
As an individual, you learn all your stuff, but then you become a vital part of your community. And that's how you get respect. And you learn how you fit in. So you've got to remember, you're an individual, but you're part of a collective. And being part of that collective is important because it's about your survival. You could never survive in the Australian bush by yourself, even today.
You learn stuff, not just for yourself, but because you're part of a community.
You're even given sometimes a totem or tinga, like the kangaroo, and that would mean that you'd find out about all that animal. So you become a knowledge holder of that particular thing. And so if we've got all the different totems...
So it's like a smart way of passing down knowledge.
That's right.
So if you get everybody to dedicate, like, their identity to a specific thing, the communities, in a sense, were big stores of data.
You got it. So you became valuable. Is it fascinating, is it, when you think about it? You know, all that information is very, very important, really important. And how we actually held it, because you've got to remember there's no backup. There's just people.
No computers. Just people remembering all that information.
Hey, I've got a question. How did you remember everything?
Through story, song and dance.
Through
and
teaching
art.
In places like this.
Exactly,
right?
And through repetition. You know, when you learn your times tables. You
so that's, that was their main method of teaching.
That's how they taught it. I've gone to ceremonies where we had these 100 fellows there calling out these, young fellows calling out these water holes for a week. I loved it the first day in language. I was learning all this stuff. After about a day or two, it was driving me nuts. I knew those water holes for about 2 or 3 years later.
So it's like now yeah. You know where the water holes are. Now you know what they're called.
Yes.
Wayne says that First Nations people taught and still teach their kids by passing on all their knowledge, like a giant memorised Wikipedia. Everything about water and plants and food, to spiritual beliefs and laws. Learning happens all over country. Through storytelling, song, ceremony, dance, and special memory games, like repeating things over and over again.
I got a question.
If I saw those patterns in the cave, I wonder how long have they been there?
Excellent question. This cave classroom has been used for at least 22,000 years. And that's a lot of lessons, and it's a really long time. Can we know exactly what was taught in this classroom after all this time?
How do we know what really happened?
I asked Wayne, how can we be sure what the engravings on the walls of this cave really mean?
We just do our best. And we cannot definitively say that this is what it is. And that's probably how it was anyhow, because it depends on what knowledge level you're at. So we can look at some of the art and it can tell us what's going on in country, but we never know the full story.
Before we said goodbye, Wayne pointed out something super cool. This place is still a classroom today. Why? Because we are learning in it right now. And that includes you.
Well, there we go. Eh? We got a little bit soaked, but not too bad, eh?
No, it wasn't too bad.
Anyhow, look, it's been really good meeting up with you. Mm-hmm. And Yalu, as we say, I go, but we continue.
Yalu, Wayne. Right now, we're leaving Darug and Gundungurra country of the Blue Mountains and going way up north, pretty much in a diagonal line northwest of Sydney to the very top of Australia. We've arrived in Yolnu country.
Hey, we are Yolnu country.
At a community called Yirrkala.
Hello, my name is Mirkeoi Gunnambar Stubbs. I'm a Yolngu woman of Northeast Arnhem Land in the Northern Territory in a place called Yirrkala.
In Yirrkala, the main language people speak is Yolnu Mara. Here's Merikawe introducing herself in Yolnu Mara.
Kulolo markap mirim walal. Ngarenyako Mirkeoi Gunnambar Stubbs. Yirrkala is east of Darwin on the Gulf of Carpentaria, right on the tip of the peninsula.
And just like in the Blue Mountains, First Nations people here learn on country too. And one place Yolnu kids learn is on the beach.
Well, living at Yirrkala, it's right on the coast, right on the sea. And the water is so clear and blue or green, it changes colour, depends on the day. So every day a lot of people, especially women, go down to the beach and go fishing, collect oysters, get shellfish for dinner. And through this the children learn when, you know, mother teaches them or their grandmother teaches them.
Hey, can I ask something?
I wonder what their grandmas and aunties and that told them how it is dangerous and how it's good and what to eat.
There's big things like the baru, the crocodile, that is out there. So you have to always keep an eye out for the big ones, especially the crocodile. But also there are good things too on the beach, especially when the tide goes out, because it exposes lovely things to eat like the maple, oysters. There's all these shellfish, mitawara, jinjalma, and we bring them all together and we cook it up and have a feast.
That sounds like a delicious way to learn. Can you think of a time where you've learnt stuff outside of the classroom in nature?
The Yolngu children have to also learn the names of every animal that lives on the beach, but also on the land as well. It's like a classroom when you go out anywhere, whether it's inland or whether it's to the beach.
So today, First Nations kids can have many classrooms. But during colonisation, living and learning on country was often really, really disrupted. Many First Nations kids weren't allowed to learn their culture and language. Some communities could keep teaching and learning, but other communities had to teach and learn in secret. Have you learnt about how colonisation affected Aboriginal people in your local area? And now, many First Nations communities are reviving their cultural knowledge and languages.
Children today, growing up in this day and age, they understand languages, whether it's English or Yolngu Mara, because I hear them all the time. You know, they can switch from one language to another in a blink of an eye.
Thanks to the resilience and hard work of Aboriginal people, the teaching and learning continues. And today, learning Indigenous knowledge happens inside school classrooms too, all over Australia. Let's go to one of those classrooms.
All over Australia, young people like you.
Now, I didn't tell you that Merica Way is the principal at Yirrkala Bilingual School. Bilingual means two languages.
So we're just talking about
at Yirrkala Bilingual School, the teachers and students speak at least two languages. Kids at Yirrkala learn about their own Yolnu history, culture and knowledge, and Australian and world history too. Can you hear Principal Merica Way singing in Yolnu Mata language?
Anybody want to translate the song? What's Jamar Kulit Dara? Yeah, kids stand up. Just like father. Yeah, just like father.
Mm-hmm. So the classrooms at Yirrkala School, it's more friendly. The kids can sit on the table or mats where the kids can sit on the floor as well. So it's more open and more friendly and a lot of fun.
That does sound like a fun classroom. These days, First Nations kids often have two kinds of classrooms. Places that look like the classroom you're probably sitting in right now, and places where they learn on country and from country. And you know what? We've all got the chance to learn on and from country. Does your school have a reconciliation action plan? If you do, you can use that plan to contact the First Nations community in your local area to lead that learning on country. You've been listening to Hey History. If you want to see photos of the beach at Yirrkala or the rock shelter in the Blue Mountains, go to our website. And while you're there, check out some fun activities and a lesson plan for your classroom, whatever type of classroom it is. Thank you so much to Yirrkala School, Buku Arts Centre and La Perouse Primary School. Hey, have you heard about other episodes of Hey History? You can listen to them in any order. There's The Oldest Classroom, Convict Kids and Gold Fever, and a bonus episode for your teacher, How to Talk with Kids About Australian History. Hey History is made on Gadigal Country by Anna Clark, Claire Wright, Jane Curtis and Britta Jorgensen. It's endorsed by the History Teachers Association of New South Wales. And your host is me, Axel Clark. Executive producers are Claire Wright and Anna Clark. Claire Wright is Professor of History and Public Engagement at La Trobe University. Anna Clark is Professor of History at the University of Technology, Sydney. Podcast concept, design and development by Anna Clark. Indigenous cultural consultant is Katrina Thorpe. Story editor is Kyla Slavin. Learning material by Nick Adeney. Thanks to all the students whose voices you hear in this episode, and their schools and teachers. Sandy Bay Primary School, Marrickville West Primary School, Westbourne Grammar School, Preshill Primary School, La Perouse Primary School, and Yirrkala Bilingual School. Hey History is produced by the Australian Centre for Public History and Impact Studios at the University of Technology, Sydney. Impact Studios' executive producer is Sarah Gilbert.